This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with Wheelie Dealer, at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. That's Peter. And we've got another Peter with us. We've got a special guest today. We have got Claudio H. Fox, the lithium king, the researcher, the geologist, the man who knows everything to do with lithium, and has taught me loads, and that's why we've got him on the show. It's taken me nearly a year to get Claudio H. Fox on the show, and I'm absolutely thrilled because there's lots of people that want to know, who is this guy? So here we are, we've got him on the show, and we're going to go straight into this. We're going to talk about the markets a bit later on. Claudio may or may not choose to stay with us, depending on how much grief we give him or whether he gets fed up with talking to us. So we're here, we've got Claudio H. Fox on. I know some people want to ask him lots of questions, and we've got lots of questions to ask him. But first of all, we're just going to introduce him and let him tell us a little bit about himself. So, Claudio, how are you doing, fella?
All right, thank you. Thank you, Peter. And thank you, Wheelie and Pete there. A bit about me. What do you want? Just a bit of background?
Yeah, the thing is for me, we know each other, but not many other people know of you. You just see you popping up going, Lithium. So I want you to share a little bit about yourself, a bit about your background, what you share, what you want to share, and then we're going to ask you some questions in betwixt some of that as well.
Okay. I'm nobody special. I'm just worked as in education for 33 years, was a teacher, was a head teacher, and in London and South Wales, and then I'd done my bit and I retired early and to spend more time with family, basically. I was always interested in stock market, always, and investing, but just didn't feel that I had the time to do it properly. So I just played safe with Hired Aviva and just different things like that. And no funds, just different utilities, stocks and that sort of stuff. And then around 2014, I started to get interested in electric vehicles, battery metals, and start first looking at graphite and that sort of thing. And from there, just moved into buying on AIM, playing around really, starting off very small, looking at different people, seeing what was going on, and experimented, lost a lot of money, learned the hard way.
Hey, we all know that.
just learned by making some big mistakes, following the wrong people, and then decided just to start and do it my own way and bring in my own skill set and do what I thought was right, not what other people were doing.
You said something quite interesting there, mate, because it seems to be a recurring theme here, and it's not just about AIM here. It's about the fact that you've said something which resonates with so many people here, Claudio, and especially, you know, our listeners and the people that are in the market. You start off following other people you think that know what they're doing. You start off thinking, oh, that person sounds like they're clever. Oh, they've done really well with a couple of stocks, so I'll follow them, or I'll look at what they're into and I'll get into what they're doing. And that stock's gone up and they seem to keep picking winners. So I'll listen to what they're saying. They must be brighter than me, so I'm going to do all right just following them. And it 90% of the time, it doesn't work out like that.
Yeah, I was interested in graphite to start with and started looking at graphite. And there was a company, I think, Stratmin or something like that, Stratmin Global, that don't exist now. And so I started looking at graphite flake size and what the importance of that, because I thought that was the main play in the battery. And then started to look at lithium, and then, but yeah, I did follow some people, and then and just thought it was a bit of the Wild West, and that I didn't feel comfortable with that. I lost some money, and then I sort of bailed out really. And then to be honest, that was the point at which I moved on to Twitter and started to talk to people about lithium and gold on Twitter, and start to meet people and in a different light. And then I did meet a couple of guys, and one of them you'll know off Twitter is Toro, which is Toro at Toro underscore Aim, who was, he sent me some, or I saw some of his research, and I thought, this is a different level. And I started to create my own. Look, and I think that was on iron ore, actually, and iron and reserves and everything. So, but then just started to do my own work. And realize if you want to do it properly, you've got to put your own hours in, and lots of them, and get to know it. But I do remember challenging myself when I retired to really get into a new sector. And then I focused on lithium. I thought, right, okay, get into this properly. Who are the world leaders? Who knows what they're talking about? And just learn from them. Just did it that way. Put the hours in, really.
Yeah.
I think common factor between all three of us is that, and I think you'll find with more experienced and investors who've been in the game longer, they are very much self-driven. You know, I don't think any of us follow necessarily ideas from other people. You know, we may take notice of what other people are looking at occasionally. In the main, I don't take hardly any notice of what anyone else is doing. I'm really not interested. And I think it's a really important step for newer investors to make, is that for the first few years, it's almost inevitable you're going to be following people and learning the ropes. And, you know, there's no harm in that as long as you're following the right people. But so often you're just going to end up, you know, losing money as a result. And once you're losing money, you've got to realize and stop doing it. But I think that the thing to progress onto is being more self-driven. That really is how you're going to get successful. You're not going to do it just by copying people.
I completely agree.
I mean, one of the things that I love about what you said as well, though, Claudio, was the fact that you bumped into Toro underscore Aim, and he's an absolutely phenomenal researcher. And he's one of the ones that made me sit up and think, actually, people talk about me researching stuff, but that guy goes all in regarding his research. And then you went and saw what level Toro was at, and then you took it to another level. I was like, I'm not even going to try and keep up with them two anymore.
Well, what I did was, and words of an old head teacher, a boss of mine, who said, no matter what it is, you've got to put the hours in. If you want to be good at something, you've got to put the hours in, whether it's learning a language, playing a music instrument, or training for football, whatever it is, you've got to put the hours in. And so I just did that. With that level of work with Toro and other people as well, there's some pretty good guys out there. But what I realized was, because at the time I was invested in other areas. One was a blockchain and cannabis and different things. And then I realized, actually, I don't know enough about this myself. And I'm not really interested that much in it. So I've moved away and stuck to what I know, stuck to what I'm interested in. And it is reading, you know, my wife thinks I'm crazy, but I like reading a book on geology. Or I like unpicking different bits and pieces. And it may be, my dad was a geography teacher with a geologist, physical geographer. So I was dragged around rocks and everything as a kid. So maybe that's where the interest comes from. But doing it, and I started building scrapbooks up, started printing things out. I need old school, and I started doing it that way on various things, gold, lithium, iron ore, bauxite, and just getting into the detail of it. Yeah. But then one thing, Peter, was that I went to an event and I saw you there in London, one of the Mellor investors or something.
It was the Master Investor Show. We went there to have a look at Fast Forward, and we the three of us what were there at the time came away scratching our heads going, oh boy, this doesn't sound like it's, well, you know.
One of the things, and that's one thing I have done is taken it to another level and I go to London, I go stay overnight for a few days even, I go to events and talk to CEOs. And I picked that up from that event was, and seeing actually you, Peter Conkers, how you interrogated somebody on the stage after they'd just done an interview. And I thought, well, okay, that's another way. You go and ask the questions. And my background as a head teacher, sort of going through different stuff and an inspector, sort of asking hard questions of people, I just put that into asking CEOs tough questions or asking them and seeing who would help as well when I didn't know stuff.
It's interesting because I've done, you know, a fair bit of that talking to CEOs and CFOs and whatever on stands. And there's quite a few useful things with how you do that. And the things that I've found is that it's really important to build rapport with them and to be friendly with them and to let the conversations develop. So what I often like to do, whereas most people, what you often find at something like Mello, they'll be like, breakout sessions where people are all in a room and these things go on all day, and then you find that people come out of the room and they go and look at the stands, and you end up with this big ruck of people around each of the CEOs and whatever. And in that environment, you're never going to get a chance to ask your questions. So I would rather, before the show, work out what companies I want to talk to, and it might be three or four. Not many, yeah, the ones I really want to focus on. And then while everyone else is in the breakout sessions, I'm out talking to the CEOs and say, I've got them on my own. There's no one else there. And it means that you can spend time with them, you know, let the conversations develop and have a few things you really want to understand about those companies that you've sort of planned in advance. And I find that really helps. And it's definitely a way I like to do things, definitely.
But with that, I mean, to taking that onto another level then, I went to Minds and Money in London, but the one I like actually now, and I think after getting more confidence of going to these, is One-to-One, which is held in the old County Hall in London off Westminster Bridge, and where you book one-to-one sessions in a booth or in a little area with the company, so you could there's a schedule for it, so you go in there knowing you've got an 11:30 to 12 slot with a company, and that's quite intimidating, I have to say, with some of the companies and some people, and some people are great and other CEOs, you know, like they may be nervous as well, and it can be awkward, but I do like that way of working and knowing who you're going there. So again, that's in May this year. Yeah. In a few months, and I've already targeting a few companies because I'm looking to start again and do a few more while other companies or shares I've got, I'm just letting them run. So I'm starting to...
Is that primarily mining, or does that do wider than just mining?
No, it is mostly mining, and that's, again, where I stick to what I know.
And
they have good panel sessions there, whether it'll be on gold price or on jurisdictions, or they bring specialists in to talk about different things on different metals, or lots of brokers there, lots of companies. I mean, there's a lot of chatting over a beer or whatever afterwards as well. It's a good way to meet the CEO or the chairman, or I find that very helpful.
What I was going to say, Peter, to you and Claudio, was there's a book, and I'm sure it's called Outliers by Michael Gladwell. Yeah. And it basically says the rule goes like this. It takes 10,000 hours of research and of intensive practice to achieve mastery of complex skills and materials.
Yeah.
So that's what it's about. It's about getting those 10,000 hours in to actually get any good at anything, whether it be playing an instrument, you know, learning a new skill. And I think with regards to you going into the lith, you know, going from the tech, the cannabis space and all general mining to saying, I'm going to actually focus right down onto lithium, which is why we're speaking today. you've just gone from zero to whoosh. And I would say probably since 2015, you've probably nudged that 10,000 hours easily in what I've seen you compute anyway, regarding the numbers of stuff that you've done and the spreadsheets you've put up and the details you've got into and the CEOs you've spoken to. And I've gone, you know what, I'm not going to try and keep up with that. I've got other things I want to do. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, there are a lot of hours, and when you work like this, you're at my office, it's one chair, or sometimes I'm down by the sea and I'm sitting looking across the sea and I'm just working out different stuff there, because you can be mobile, you can be in the garden, and sometimes you just don't do anything. But the hours with regards to the spreadsheets I've got, we're setting them up, but that's my background of a lot of data analysis and doing that and setting stuff up. So I mean, I started to look at lithium. When I did, there was about 100 plus companies that I've put into a spreadsheet, and that's whittled down now. I've got about 60 that I've got a tracking on their market cap over 2 years. And then I put hyperlinks into it with the projects, with the board, went through all the boards. I'm somewhere on the autistic spectrum with this, I know, but it's the level of detail that you get. And once you've set it up, it's very easy to just sort of go in and out of. So to keep tabs on what's happening in each area or which company, which project.
Okay, so let's wind this back a little bit, right? You've got all of these different commodities to choose from, Claudio, and you decided lithium. Why?
good question. It's not just lithium. I do gold. I've got gold as well.
I know you do, but you've just gone down this rabbit hole of lithium. Okay. You've come out and you've gone elsewhere since then, but went down the rabbit hole. Mate.
Because, I was invested in Iron Ridge from 2015 in properly, and then into 16. And they were in gold. They then... 2016 September or something, they went into Ghana with the lithium, and that sort of prodded up a bit, and so started to look at that properly. And then, but with lithium, you've got hard rock, spodumene, you've got various types of hard rock, you've got clay sedimentary deposits, and then you've got the brines in lithium triangle. So it's all a minefield. So I just thought, right, this is enough here to concentrate on. So just stuck to that. And then that's where the reading comes in, and you had to do that. And I saw the potential. And with regards to going into the brine, it is as simple as this. Okay, so there I am. I'm invested in hard rock lithium in Ghana, in the Ivory Coast. And then I got it, and I said something about, I put a tweet out about it, and Stu Crow, of chairman of Lake Resources, answered a tweet of mine saying, don't forget to look at our little project or something. It was simple as that. It's nothing made. And I went,
you are over beer.
I went, what little project? I didn't know you were. And because he's a director of Iron Ridge, but he's also the chair of Lake. So I thought, where is this? So I went and had a look. And then we started to look at the brine, didn't know anything about brine, but saw that, one word, scale. Saw the scale on offer in Argentina. And to be honest, it wasn't just me. There was a couple of other guys who moved over, and we started buying on the ASX as well and doing that. One of them, Stevie H, is no longer with us. But we bounced around ideas off what is brine, and then we asked questions, and we just asked them, how deep does it go? You know, we asked stupid questions. Now I realize really stupid questions, and they answered them. You know, Steve Promnitz of Lake answered them, and equally, Len Kolf of Atlantic Lithium was really helpful in answering questions about the hard rock, how it works, where it is, the density of the spodumene and in the pegmatites and things like that. So we went off on a tangent, and then from that, then it sort of spirals. And then you're looking at then you were looking at what the supply chain was. Where was this lithium needed? How much of it was going to be available? Which companies are the producers? Have they got enough? Who are the next wave of producers? Right, by when? So then, and this is, I'm one of the best things I've ever done was go to Benchmark Minerals in London. It's a very early start up on a train, full day and then back. Free event, and they bring in some fantastic speakers and companies. And I just went and listened to them and learned about everything. And do you know of Tony Sieber?
Yeah.
Well, I heard him speak live. Absolutely amazing. That blew my mind, talking about the million mile battery and all the lithium and where's it all coming from. And so I just carried on going. And I've actually tracked the companies that some of the ones that Benchmark, like Frontier Lithium, talked to them at 17 cents. I don't know what that is. It's $2.50 or something now. Missed that one, but I knew of it. Cypress Development, talked to Dr. Willoughby at 14 cents. That's something like 159 now. But Benchmark also had Standard Lithium, Robert Mintak, and they had Neo Metals. Chris Reed was fantastic, talking about recycling and where that's going. So Neo Metals, another brilliant one like that. But I've carried on researching and narrowed my spreadsheet down. But then I've looked at also where the auto companies are, how much lithium they've got, and how much the battery makers got, where the deals are. And it's not, my analysis is there's not enough.
Yeah. I mean, the beauty about what Benchmark do with their analysis and the events that they put on is that they actually filter out the quality of the companies to make sure that the shows are absolutely on point. They won't just say, we're doing a show, anyone that wants to come, pay us the dues and you can come on the show. They actually get people that want to come and go, whoosh. Well, you guys can come, you ladies and gents can come, you guys, no thank you very much. So that's why you get such a high caliber of attendees there, because they want to be there, because they know that it's the name Benchmark, they're going to be at a certain standard.
They're sector leaders for me. That you know, they're great. And then just from that, then I'm not sure of the year. I mean, I bought into Lake in 2017 September, but was researching it from the April to 2017. And that's gone from 4.5 cents then to 178.5 now, yesterday. And I haven't sold a bean. And I'm riding it, and I'm confident, and we'll see where we get to, because I know that that's one project they're valued on, and there's three more there. But one other thing is about, I mentioned scale of the projects, but I scaled up. What made me scale up is the thing with conviction. And one of the things I started to do was to listen to podcasts, listen to different people, including TPI. You're Twin Peaks, isn't it?
We jump down to TPI every now and then.
When you're on.
Other people know it's Twin Peaks. It's fine. Yeah. You're all right.
And then
the two Muppets.
But one thing I did do was, and you'll know of, I think, Peter, you know of Jessica Amir, and some way here, I've ended up with a lot of followers in Australia, and I don't really know how that's happened, and it's quite strange, but because there's this guy in Wales, and this has happened. But when Jessica Amir did an interview with Steve Promnitz in October 2017, when she was working at Financial News Network, now, Financial News Network, they had archived interviews, lots of CEOs across all sectors on there, and I started to go through those. Brilliant resource. And then Jessica moved to Bell Potter, and I liked her analysis. I found it quick. I thought it was on point. And so I listened to that and her weekly wraps, daily wraps. Of the following the ASX, so I got into that, but those interviews were really helpful, and I scaled up on catchy, on Steve Bromnitz and his talking then, and then carrying on going.
I mean, for me, the important thing for me, mate, is the fact that not only did you do a deep dive and continue to deep dive, right? You've continued to actually embrace the differences regarding all the other different companies. What you've tried to do, and you're doing very well at doing it as well, is not dissimilar to what Pete and I are doing. So Weedy's got his blog, he's got his website, he's even gone onto, I won't swear, onto TikTok now to try and enable people to learn stuff from him. Don't laugh. He's trying to encourage people to learn. So he's gone onto another platform, which is brilliant, right? It's not for everybody, but Pete's doing that. And it's about the fact that you've then decided, all right, I've got my stocks, but there's all this other information here about the peers or there are other companies associated with this. Let me do some research. Let me share that freely with other people. That's the reason why you've got these followers in Australia. This is why Pete Wheely's got followers in Canada and America and all over the bloody world. Oh, sorry, folks. Because we're sharing, we're giving stuff. Too many people are like, oh, this is mine. I put the hours in. I'm not going to share it. It's about the fact that we're trying to pay it forward. We're trying to put something together here. So same with this podcast, whereby if we had known 25 years ago this sort of stuff, we wouldn't make as many mistakes. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, you imagine if we knew back then what we know now, I mean, the difference in our returns would be we'd all be sat on a beach in the Bahamas, you know, just whatever.
One of my sons said to me last week or the week before, he said, for goodness sake, why didn't you do this ages ago, Dad? You know, because he had a look at the portfolio. And he said, why didn't you do this years ago? And I wholeheartedly said, if I'd have done that, I wouldn't have had the career that I had, and I wouldn't have had an impact worked in a challenging area and I coached sports and different things, and I used to love being part of helping run a choir. I would never have done all of that. So I had a fantastic time in education, and then I've brought it over to this, and I wholeheartedly support your Memphis work and the charity work, because that's something that inclusion has been close to my heart as well for various reasons over the years. So it's important to do things the right way, I think. But also, I wouldn't have had the experience I had to talk to the CEOs, to unpick, to do the data, to do all the stuff that I do. And then I think the comparative stuff is really important. And that's what I got from comparative across, you know, in school to school peer comparisons, data. We were so data driven, and I've just reinvented that into what I'm doing with investing, and it's paying off. But the sharing it is, I started to do some video reels and things like that to support. You know, I could have been paid for it. I could have, and I've turned it all down. For different companies, I've had companies that I don't even know have seen it and said, "Oh, could you do something?" I said, "No, I'm not interested." So
this is what I find. It's like, you know, in theory, there's various things we could charge for, whatever, but I'm just not interested in it. It's like it just creates a whole new level of admin and aggravation, and I'm just not interested in that. I'm interested in doing what I do, making these podcasts, putting out my tweets, whatever I do. And I find that helps my investing, because it's one of the things that I learned at college. I can sort of specifically remember almost the event where it happened, where a load of my friends at university were really struggling with accounting, but I understood it quite well. And I remember I was sat with about six or seven of them teaching them how to do it. And it really occurred to me during that sort of process that I thought, I'm learning it better myself by teaching it to them. And it was, you know, and that's how I feel about what I do now. It's like it's driving me forward and making me a better investor, the simple fact that I'm doing what I do.
The other thing that is, you know, there's something intrinsic in the way I've been helping other people, and that's what we do, you know. I've got two sons, which are type 1 diabetics, And so I was donating money last week to the Ukraine and diabetic, to get insulin into Ukraine. You know, there's a whole load of different things which, you know, you want to help other people. And with that, continuing to learn what you're doing, what you're about, and then helping other people. That's what I've done for 35 years, so I'll just carry on doing it. But, you know, I'm in a very comfortable position. I'm time rich and I can help others. So, you know, I think we should be doing that.
Whilst we're on the subject of people giving and doing really good work, I think it's really important at this stage for and I'll let you do this, please, Claudio, to give a big shout out and just bless, you know, regarding the Atlantic Lithium CEO, Vince Mascalo, who sadly passed away just recently, because I know you got to know him really, really well. And a lot of the Atlantic Lithium folks and the lithium industry just, you know, loved the guy.
Thank you. I mean, I met him a few times. I've got here, I've got a note here, and I said investing in good people is what I think. Ooh. Right? Yeah. So spotting the wide boys and spotting those, and then investing in good people. So, and how do you identify those, you know? And there's a bit on intuition and gut feeling, but as well. I met Vince Mascalo with a few other shareholders at events, at one-to-one, at Minds and Money, I think a couple of times, and one-to-one again. And just, I come back to those that help you. I mean, he was straight talking. He would say, well, who are you? What do you do now? And then he would say, well, yeah, we're doing this, we're doing that. And him and Len Koff did a great job. He'll explain the geology and what's different bits are. But yeah, Vince died, was it last week? The 10th, wasn't it? The day after the last podcast I was listening to. He's done all the work in building up the company to where at this stage, and I really like the guy, and his focus, his drive, his passion, and I found him very easy to talk to, and like a lot of them, you know, and that company, and they've appointed now Len as interim CEO.
Let me interrupt you here, Claudio. Tell me about the picture where he was dragging a horse. Share that story with me.
Yeah, that was a tweet.
That's the sort of character he was. He didn't give a damn, did he?
That was a tweet from Vince, I think. Well, Atlantic Lithium and Iron Ridge split, didn't it, into Rika, demerged and into Rika Resources and Atlantic Lithium. And when Vince put out a tweet with a horse, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And the horse was stood there and the man was on the floor drinking water and the horse was saying no. And I think it was Vince's reference to AIM, that everything was there. It was all the information was there. The RNSs are superbly written, and they are, if you go from... There's references in...
Back up a minute there here, Claudio. Some of the RNSs are superbly written. Yeah, the ones that Len was doing for Atlantic Lithium or Iron Ridge at the time were and are with Lake. Yeah. Not all of them are, mate, so I need to correct
you on that. Those ones of Atlantic and Iron Ridge are so detailed. And then...
Yes.
And I think Vince was saying... It's all there. You've just got to read it, and because it's undervalued, but many people don't read them. So I think that was his sense of humour. I liked it. It's really sad for the company, but they've moved forward with putting Len in as CEO, and then we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm still very confident in that company and where it is and what it's doing. So it's going well at the moment.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
So you got into Iron Ridge first.
Yeah. Yeah?
And later on, you got into Lake.
Yeah.
So Iron Ridge, which is now Atlantic Lithium and Rika.
Yeah.
And then Lake. So tell us about what it was about Atlantic Lithium then that you thought, and at what price you got in and why. You know, you mentioned
okay,
the team at Atlantic Lithium or Iron Ridge at the time, the parity of data.
A similar sort of story of looking at the scale as well. And then one of the things with the lithium, when you start to get into lithium, you realise that not all lithium is equal and it's a specialty chemical. And what's the end product? Where's the end product going? It's got to get through. If it's going into battery, it's got to go through qualification. And Vivas Kumar from Benchmark, brilliant presentation by him explaining all that and how to get to a contract level. But so you're looking at purity levels and the percentages. So what is battery grade? You know, there was sort of saying battery grade 99.5 and then Iron Ridge or Atlantic Lithium in Ghana put out their spodumene. I think when they did it converted to carbonate, I think it was 99.92% purity. The spodumene in the pegmatites in that West African, in Ghana, that geological area, was spodumene rich, spodumene dense and rich in the pegmatites, quite unique. And I got that from a fantastic talk from Catherine Goodenough of the British Geological Society, brilliant talk with slides all about Africa and pegmatites. It's close, tier one logistics, close to the port. It's just, and the scale is enormous. I think it's going to be a lot bigger. But high purity, so it's going to be in demand.
So this is what happens, right? You buy in, the share price goes up, it then drifts, it then comes down. What and how do you stay convicted? Is it because of your research? Is it because you can see the scale?
Yeah.
Why are you holding or adding when other people are selling? Because it's like, oh, this is going nowhere.
I bought, my highest buy is about 45p or something like that, a couple of years, 2017. But I bought a lot when it went down to 7p a year and a bit ago.
That's a massive drawdown, mate. Everyone else is going like that, going, yeah. Oh my gosh. Pete and I are going, that's just madness. That's crazy. You should have sold that ages ago.
You know? Why? Because nothing has changed. The fundamentals.
That's what smart people do. They go, stop loss there, and they go out.
I don't do stop losses.
45-7, mate.
I don't do stop losses.
Okay.
So why put a load of more money in when it's gone down that? And you can see on the chart, it's awful. But why? And the same with Lake. Lake was like that. Similarities are both there. The high purity lithium at scale, and there's this lithium disconnect. There is just not enough lithium there. So yes, there's questions about Lake with jurisdiction in Argentina. Well, I'm not worried about that because it's got federal. And then we got Ghana, always in Africa. Well, that's not a worry to me because Ghana is very stable. It's a mining friendly.
Ghana's one of the better ones, isn't it? I would say,
So then you're looking at the quality of the lithium actually product. What is the product like? Who was going to want that? So come back to what I said about Vivas Kumar of Benchmark, and when you understand the qualification process, then you're looking for the better quality lithium. So take something like, I think, SQM, who produced, one of the biggest producers. They produce loads, but a lot of it is waste because it doesn't match it's not the required quality. If you get the more, I mean, I'm not an expert. This is stuff I picked up on, but the battery makers want, as far as I understand it, the the same, if they can get the more of the product and the same lithium from one resource source, then it, they're not having to blend it. You're going to, it's a bit like wine, I suppose, you get better quality. Once you start having to add reagents and things like that, and it starts to become difficult. But then in, okay, Atlantic Lithium, just look at their logistics. On, they're 115 miles from a port, a big boatload of port. Compared, and comes back to comparative data. Look at the distance of mileage to ports for other, some of the other big African producers. They got access to Europe with the European market. That was another big thing driving the lithium, about the regulation change. Everybody's going to be driving electric vehicles. So Atlantic Lithium can go across the Atlantic or up to Europe. And then they've got that 50% deal with Piedmont, who just raised a load of money yesterday, I think.
Let me just touch on one thing, though, going back to Lake a little bit, and Argentina. This is questions. I'm asking you questions now that people want me to ask you, and I want to ask you, because, you know, I'm reading these concerns of people going, Argentina, they've just gone and grabbed stuff from other people and seized stuff from other people and taken stuff, billions of pounds in the past. Surely that's a risk. You know, it's not the safest of places to go and work. I know it's federal, but it still happens where they go, yeah, you're making profits now. We'll have that. Thank you very much. And it happens all over the world. You know,
Argentina's in a bit of a mess, isn't it, economically?
Okay. It has been historically.
Well, it is now, I think. I think it's in quite a bad way from what I've
Fair points, and I hear it, and it's just sort of jurisdictional sort of analysis of weighing up risk and reward. So Argentina is federal. Come back to research again. The Catamarca government, local government, which is where Cachi, the resource, flagship resource, 50,000 tonnes per annum of lake, the Catamarca government chose that resource, a lake, as one of their chosen companies to support, I think in 2017. Argentina opened up after Macri won the election in 2015. Steve Plomlitz, as far as I'm aware, got in, would worked in Chile, Rio Tinto, knew the area, Spanish speaker, had contacts on the ground, and got in and pegged land up in Argentina around all the majors, which they didn't want, I think, on the periphery of the Salas. And I know that he had a concept with some of that, how the Sala, the way the lithium and the brine settles, and he proved on this sort of swimming pool that it's not in a dish shape, but it's like it's more of a swimming pool, and that's, they've done well with that. So but Macri went in, then there's been two elections since then, but when Macri won the election, brought in lots of foreign investment, and then he opened it up. Latin America, Chile, I have looked at Chile and I haven't gone into Chile or Chile, because they are the ones talking about nationalising or setting up a government. And again, SQM does the connections with the board and there and past presidents and different things. So there's jurisdictional risk there, although some good companies...
Oh, you say SQM, is that a country or is that...
No. It's one of the top five lithium producers.
Right. I'm with you.
And then the other one in Latin America is Peru, where I've got a copper holding, which I really love, but that's 50% down because of political, and I think that takes time to settle. But here we are.
Yep, the book, famous book.
Superb book in terms of getting into the jurisdiction. It tells you about Bolivia and all Argentina, all the different things.
Who's that by?
Lucas Bednarski.
Right.
This is how sad I am. This is my birthday present from my son.
Absolutely fine, mate. I get books all the time. Now, Pete, Peter, I'm conscious we've had Claudio on here for a little while. I want to get
no
down
problem.
To this.
It's good stuff, mate. It's good stuff.
With this. And I want to ask you a couple of questions regarding, you know, your focus now on mainly on mining. You started out on utilities. You started off with insurance companies, the conservative type. What's the portfolio now? What's in it? What's the level of concentration? And do you want to share some of your percentage returns? You share what you want to share and don't share what you don't want to share. Yeah?
Oh, okay. I've been looking at, I tell you another thing, this book blew my mind.
Yeah. William Green, brilliant book. Yeah.
And you know,
I'm hoping to interview him. Just before we say something, yeah. I need to say this because I keep forgetting to do it, and I'll do it whilst you've mentioned William Green. For all of our listeners, there's another project that I work on. It's called the Investing Matters Podcast. And on there, I interview CEOs, CFOs, economists, psychologists, fund managers, co-fund managers, founders of businesses. And that's where you're going to find interviews with the likes of William Green when he comes on the show. Yeah. We've interviewed Stephen Yu of Blue Whale Capital. We've had Charlotte Ransom recently of Net Wealth. We've had Annabelle Brody Smith of the AIC, that can be found on the website. So please go and visit that particular podcast, and hopefully you'll see some really, really good interviews with people. But William Green is definitely one I'm hoping to get. So William, if you're listening, give me a shout.
I found that book incredible on lots of different levels as well. And the bit I'm rereading a bit about Nick Sleep, who's this investor chap, yes, who's come under the radar and I've never heard of. So I'm reading.
No. He's been like that in the radar, and he's gone a little bit under the radar.
So I've missed it. But his philanthropic nature and everything, and I love that. So, right, yeah. What do you say? Concentrated focus.
Concentration. I mean, because Pete and I are always having this conversation with various people. Some people are saying, oh, you know what? You and Conkers have got way too many stocks. I've only got 6. I've only got 12. I've only got 9. And the thing is, that's great. You know, when the markets are going in your favor, brilliant. You've got 9 and they're all going up, fantastic. But if you've only got 9 and 8 of them are going wrong, all of a sudden your portfolio is getting smashed.
Okay.
What if it's so accurate?
Here's my approach then. Right. I've got that thing about invest what you can only afford to lose. That's fine until you sort of get a bigger pot and then you think, actually, I can't afford to lose any of this, or can I, you know, because, you know, what do I need the money for? You know, walking the dog or walking on the beach or going out for a coffee, whatever I've got, I'm still going to do the same things and go and watch football. You know, so
we're going for a curry and stuff.
Yeah. curry nights with the mates and, you know, so with that in mind, I took some risk. And I've concentrated my portfolio. I realise that.
So, Claudio, have you got income from other sources as well then?
I've got
or
my...
Or does all your income come from investing?
No. I've got my pension. I took my pension early.
Cool, yeah.
So
and that helps you quite a lot with your, you know, the cost of life sort of thing.
Yeah, I've got, everything's worked out, so I don't have to, I'm cheap to run, you know.
Mate, we all are. Mate, I'm just cheap, to run.
I'm in a good position where I could, I've got a state pension coming down the line. I've got my teacher's pension, which my dad said when I started working, this is one of the best pensions you can ever get. So don't, you know, we're keeping it. And so I've got that. But then I decided, well, okay, let's take a bit of risk with this and play around. And then it's sort of just mushroomed from there.
I think that's a really good point.
Sorry, let's just tell us, how many stocks do you have?
Right, I've got them here. I've got 6 lithium.
Yep.
3 gold.
Yep.
2 copper.
Yep.
1 nickel.
1 nickel, yep.
I think that's it. Oh, and I've got one, which is something... One which, and this is a company to be wary of, the company that was gold, then was lithium, then is something else.
That's an avoid, mate.
But I've kept it in my portfolio. I haven't sold it, just as a reminder.
of lessons learned, you mean?
Yeah, but it's something like 80% down, and you know, but I'm not selling it because it's everything, like, be careful. But so
yeah, use it as a capital, use it against your capital gains, mate. Yeah, that's what I'd be doing.
I've got to look at that.
I'm conscious of the time, mate, so I'm going to keep you to
yeah. So, okay, well,
tell me about some of the ones that you've got here, some of the ones that you've got, and why.
What's the cover?
Okay, I've got Sayona Mining, SYA, on the ASX.
Yep.
Oh, just like that. It's another one that Piedmont's feeding in, like Piedmont with Atlantic Lithium, Piedmont, Sayona. They're in Canada, North American company, feeding into the supply chain in North America. I like that.
Tell us about how much that's grown in the last 2 years, mate.
So how much
people get the scale in this? The last 2 years, how much that's grown exponentially? Percentage-wise, it's grown in the last 2 years from its lows. Sayona.
I'm 100% up in it. I don't know what it is. It's had 21 cents. It's going. It'll go to a dollar at some point.
Right. Okay.
So, Sayona. I do hold some Frontier Lithium and CYP, but not much. And then I've got a private company, Lithium, Cornish Lithium, which is in Cornwall. And I've got an invite to go down there. I like the way that's been set up by Jeremy Rathall. And it's hard rock granite. As well as geothermal brine, and they're linked with Lake Lilac Solutions as well, looking at, and I like their geo, Lucy Crane, the way she talks. And so I want to go down there. I've had an invite to go down and have a look and see what they're doing. And when that lists, I'll scale up.
Just so you know,
Sayona's up 425% in the past 12 months.
Yeah. Well, there you are. I'm 100% up on it. It's private. It's not listed.
It's private. It's private.
Yeah.
And here's another one. I bought into that on Crowdcube.
Oh, that's useful.
Did I send you the link for that?
Yeah, they raised something like 5 million on Crowdcube, and we're after like 2 million. Crazy. But and that's got government.
I sent everyone that link and I went, I'm not buying it.
But I like them. But then I won't tell you the nickel company I'm in.
Okay.
Because I'm scaling up. I'll tell you Peru Copper, because that's one. I won't tell you the other copper because I'm buying that.
With Peru, I always call it Shaka Khan.
And that CEO, David Kelly, is brilliant. He's if you like your copper, break your pipes, he was brilliant. I went through that with him. I did a one-to-one Zoom meeting with him through one-to-one, and he was great. He answered all the questions. And just to go back to jurisdiction briefly about looking at Latin America, Paola Rojas, who's now based in Sydney Capital, she did a keynote speech with Spotlight Mining when they were doing the webinars, and she did the keynote for the Latin American one. And her dad was a geo and did a lot of copper discoveries. And I saw her eyes pop on different things, and I liked that. And then I looked at Chacana.
For disclosure, I've had a nibble at Chacana. I'm not fully loaded yet, so I'll disclose that.
I do like that. I'm gonna go. Hopefully, they're in London in May, so I can go and talk to them again. And then I've got.
Well, I might join you on that one.
Yeah, I've got Reek Resources, which is now unlisted, which is hopefully go to the to the ASX. I've got a load of those, and then Red River Resources. No, Red River. Forgot the name now. And that's.
I do that all the time.
Oh, there's so many of them. Yeah. And that's on the TSX. That is. Yeah, Riverside Resources, sorry. And that's I think John Stacey Marks, is it the, I do like looking at different people with a good track record. And so a bit like, you know, where, if Guardiola left Man City, then he went to somewhere else, then you'd follow him and you'd expect him to do well.
He's not, listen, Claudio, he's not going to Cardiff, mate, and he's not going to Leicester. Hey, your two favourites, he's not going there.
I'm a Cardiff City season ticket holder now. I don't like Cardiff.
But your heart lives in Leicester, mate. We know.
Yeah,
that.
My friends just we're all Cardiff fans, so I go down there with them.
We just lost 10% of our listeners who are not fans of us.
They're improving.
Wow,
other ones I've got. I'll just say I am heavily concentrated.
I guesstimate you're in a dozen, but going back to jurisdiction again, and forget about the geology of it, because I know you're going to go into the geology side of it in the past, and have assured yourself that you've got the right, you know, assets and that it can scale. What are you looking for when you go, great assets, but not going to go there into that country? Just so our listeners, because our listeners are looking at great assets, and it all goes Pete Tong, because the geopolitics on that area just smashes it to pieces, as we're seeing now with, you know, what's going on in Russia and stuff being seized all over the place.
Russia kept on popping up years ago, and I know no interest, don't like that, didn't like all the London grad stuff. Mexico I'm happy with, and different things I like, I'm aware of that. The thing with jurisdictions is, you know, you can have problems in the US or you can have problems in Britain or in Europe, because you get into not in my backyard, don't you? You know, so everybody Africa's terrible. Well, in Cornwall, they've got a mining heritage, so I don't think it's an issue so much. And like in South Wales, you've got a mining heritage. So people, I mean, I used to live next door to an open or near and a mile away from an open cast. And it wasn't on a dry day. It was annoying because you get a bit of dust, but it's not a major issue. But that is an issue in putting in some new mines in Europe and in the US and Canada. Mm-hmm. Canada, maybe not.
Be interesting to see if that, not in my backyard, changes to an extent. Like, for instance, with, you know, there's a lot more talk now about onshore wind turbines again. There's a lot more talk about fracking. You know, maybe we're going to find that the green lobby gets kicked aside a bit, you know, because basically we need the energy, we need minerals, you know, and it's better than you know, funding a warmonger.
I agree with that, and I don't know where it's going to go. I was looking at uranium, and I've met a few companies with that, but I just didn't have the cash available at the time. And that's one of the things, is that I identified a lot of these companies but didn't have cash at the time. Now I have, but a lot of them have already gone. So that's why I'm looking again for a fresh start. But other jurisdictions, not, you know, DRC, not comfortable with that.
They're not good on human rights and workers' rights.
And it's slap in the middle of Africa as well. So I'm invested in Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire, and I've been to West Africa, I've been to Sierra Leone, Cameroon, Gambia, different places, and Morocco. So I look favourably on Africa. I like Africa. I'm invested in Chad through Rika Resources, and there's a great 1.5 by 1 mile super pit away to come in maybe. But once it can be drilled and once it settles down, that's high risk. That is high risk, but there's high reward there.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPETES. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Are a lot of these things actually pre-production?
Some of the ones I've talked about have been in production, but some these are all, yeah, pre-production pretty much. Atlantic, I think it's 2024. Lake are looking at 2024. But if you start to look at the numbers of what happens to the NPV and the share price when they go into production, it starts to go crazy. LAC is Lithium America's one that's probably closest to production. Next one with Thacker Pass.
I guess it comes on to sort of my next sort of issue around this is how do you value these things? Because I think one of the difficulties that I've found with miners over the years is that you can get an exploration type project and you can sort of say, oh yeah, there's all this metal in the ground and at this price, the value of that metal is whatever. But when it actually comes to digging that out, you invariably find the costs go up, you invariably find the political side delays things, you invariably find they end up issuing more shares. And it becomes a real, you know, this is one of the big challenges. How do you sort of deal with that?
Okay, so I think it's a really key point of sort of where's your conviction come from, because how do you value a company? How do you value, if you can't value something, how do you know if there's upside or not?
That's right.
So one of the things, and it comes back to Toro again about how do you value the gold in the ground, and where, and there are calculations you can do to determine the value. One of the things I like to do with the lithium is to do the life of mine revenue. It's a crude way of doing it, but it gives you an indication. So, and just to give you, say, let's look at Atlantic then. OPEX of 249, because it's so close, it's on the surface, it's good infrastructure, it's close to port. And they've got their scoping study update was at 900, using price of $900 a ton for sale for spodumene concentrate. And if they're doing 299,000 tons a year, then you start to see that and a life of mine 10, 12, 14, you're into billions straight away. If you're looking at off the top of my head with Lake, then looking at their, and these numbers are just bonkers. They are bonkers. But okay, so Lake has got 20, it's had a resource of Kachi at 25,000 tons per year, looking at production for that. And it's just about to do the DFS is due out. The pilot plant's somewhere on its way to Argentina.
That's the definitive feasibility study, isn't it?
So their costs off the top of my head, I think from Lilac Resource Solutions, which is their partner, is $4,178. That's their OPEX.
That's yearly operating expense.
That's the cost. No, that's the cost of getting the resource per ton.
Right.
So that's the cost. So then you're looking at the margin. Well, okay, currently the lithium carbonate price is something around $80,000 US dollars.
Yeah.
Which is, it's ridiculous. So the margin there, if it was 4,000, talking 76,000 margin per ton, and they got 50,000 tons per annum.
So yeah, you've got to caveat that at the minute, mate, that the fact that the energy costs have gone up, and probably the cost of workers has probably gone up. So you could nudge that up to say maybe five, but the margins are still ridiculous.
Like, no, I'm not even looking at 70,000-80,000 because this disconnect is driving.
It will come down. Yeah, yeah.
But their original scoping study was done at 11,000 and 11,500, or the pre-feasibility study was done at 11,000. I've calculated it at 11, 15, 20, 30, 40,000. I've stopped at that because I think whatever contract that they do eventually to will probably be somewhere around,
in the middle.
It won't be at 70. But even at that, at 50,000, then it's targeting. The numbers are bonkers. I mean, this is my research file, right? And then at the back here, I spend all my time just totting up the numbers, old school style. But it's so that's the when it dropped. Then when I was doing my own calculations,
that's when you decided, even though the drawdown was in Lake, and also the drawdown was in Atlantic Lithium, that your conviction was there because you were like, when this scales up and at this sort of capex and at this sort of price, if these guys hit their goals, I will still be fine with this. But a lot of people haven't done that research, Claudio. They think you're an idiot. That's why they were calling you and me an idiot for saying, we've bought into lithium.
People thought it was crazy. And not just me. I mean, I have to say, I'm small fry compared with some of the other people that I do know who are invested. And but there's some great researchers out there and different people, but you've got to be careful who you listen to and trust. I've met quite a few different events as well, so I'm very careful who I do talk to. But that conviction there. One thing with Lake is, you know, the risk of there, I suppose, is the people are saying about there's no the direct extraction is unproven. So that, you know, it's a game changer if it works. It's been processed in the labs in California. It's now on its way to Argentina. It's not mining in many ways. It's water treatment. It's water treatment, ion exchange.
It's leaching. Is that what you call it?
Well. There's different sources. There's the direct
heat leach and stuff
There's absorption using a lot of water, which as far as I understand, which is one of the issues around the arid areas. The one that the Lilac Solutions have made, of my understanding, is that it's built for an arid area and it's not using as much water, and I think it's using some sort of acid to clean the beads.
Right.
So once they've got this pilot plant and everything in place, and my understanding is that it's modular, so it's hopefully plumbing.
Yeah.
You know, and if that is water treatment, and then it's scalable. And then if that's scalable, it's going to go crazy.
We were having a conversation about a month and a half ago, you know, via DMs and on the phone, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, Lake was going to be going into the ASX 300. Yeah. Remember the conversation we're having?
Yeah.
And I was saying to you, when they go into the ASX 300, if they move rapidly, as in all the others that in the past, the mining stocks that have gone into AX, all the institutions or a lot of institutions that have that capex criteria, we'll have to buy it. Okay. And I said to you, if it gets to 171, it'll be on the verge, depending on what happens with the other stocks in the 200, it'll be on the verge of going into the ASX 200. Yeah. And if it carries on, I'm not sure if we did it yesterday or we've done it this week, it will be pushing over the 200 if others drop off or whatever. So by the end of the year, I think we'll have an ASX 200 stock. And I'm going back to what you were saying about the drawdown. And this is the bit that people were freaking out about when I put that my portfolio was at an all-time high last week, because a lot of their portfolios have been hit because, you know, they're not in various stocks that I'm in. But from where we were on the 24th of March 2020, 2 years ago, Lake Resources is up 8,059%, 8,059% from its lows. So for anybody who's thinking, crikey, that's a lot, that is madness. So the hardest thing to do right now, psychology-wise, is say, I'm going to carry on holding this for a bit longer now because it's going to go to X, Y, and Z. You've got to start getting yourself either convicted in a sense of, I've done the research and this is what's going to be happening going forward, or you've got to say, it's getting dizzy up here now, I've got to get off.
Well,
I was having this conversation, with Pete 2 months ago when the share price was 88 pence. And what did he say to me? Get rid, get out of there now, sell some. And some people are going to be having that same conversation with you, Claudio, as they're having with me now, because the share price is where it's at now.
You've always got this option. It's like you can be convicted, but you could still slice a bit off just to reduce your risk. There's no harm in doing that.
You can, Pete, but it works the other way around, mate. When the stock's going down 40%, 6%, 80%, you've got to say, when do you sell then? People are still holding them.
Well, you should have sliced earlier on.
Why haven't you sold it at 80% down or 70% then? You still got it.
I would probably. I'm looking to take some off the table. In my head, around $2, which I thought was going to be June, but I mean, it's gone. I was expecting it to draw back this week, but it's. I think the institution, once it went into 300, the institutional buy-in, it seems to have kicked it and then it's driven it, because they've got to buy, haven't they? And then that's taken it close to the 200. And so when it gets into 200, you've got a whole load of new institutions that can't buy but have to, until it is in there, and then they have to buy. That's going to drive it up. At the same time, there's a whole load of news flow to come and catalysts to come. So PFS, the pilot plant, there's drilling on the other three projects. All the numbers I gave you are on one project. They've got three more. It's like four companies in one.
This is the scary thing about it. And I'm conscious that I don't want people to think I've got you on here to ramp it. I own the share. Yeah. I tried not to say anything about it for so long. And then I said something about it X amount of, sometime last year. People going, why haven't you told us about it? And because it's a high risk stock. So I don't talk about my stocks very often on this podcast or on Twitter. I buy them, I say I bought them, I don't give the name, people go whappy. And that's because some of the stuff that I buy is high risk, you know, and I don't want to encourage anybody to buy Lake or Atlantic Lithium. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you a couple of things, right? And Sayona, I think, is going to, there are so many of them are going to do well because there's just not enough out there. And either the world's going to transition to electric vehicles or it isn't. So at that point, so it may, you know, we can, and I think it will, but it might take a little longer with different things that are happening. But so I will top slice and take some away and do whatever, you know, and build something with it. I don't know, buy a new house. I don't know. A couple of things about conviction. I want to tell you a little story as well about investing in good people. And this is about the Lake board. And I said, when I started in Lake, the three of us, it was Andy, Stevie H and I, we went over to buying on the ASX, got it all wrong. We were buying in the wrong currency. We got the timing wrong. We were doing everything wrong. And we were going, oh my God. They were ringing us to say, you've got to put money in there. I've put it in. No, it's not. You're in the wrong currency. All that. So three of us went over and Stevie H, he had cancer and he died just over a year ago. And one of the events I was going to, one-to-one, Stevie wanted to come and he was going to come along on that. And a lot of the guys who are maybe listening will know him. He's a super chap, Derby County fan, but we won't hold that against him. But he was going to come to London and then he got ill and he had to have treatment and everything and he couldn't do it. And he was genuinely very ill. And I went, so Steve Promnitz and Stu Crow, this is what they did. They haven't told anybody this, but I'll tell you. They, at one-to-one, brought an Australian top and had signed it to Stevie H and put Lake number one fan or supporter on it and said, can you take it to him? And so I did. And he was so chuffed to get that. And he's no longer with us. But the great thing about that is, And he said, and I used to go and visit him, and when he was near the end, and he said, I wanted to put right for my family, and he's done that, and he's, and the family's still holding and doing well, and with this. So there's investing in good people, and but there's other people I've met, I think, no, you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, so, Claudio, when we first met that time at the Master Investor Show, me and you both went,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the beauty, and this is the beauty. Sometimes, you know, I'm not a big fan of going to AGMs, and I'll go to the shows because it's a different setting. And I think the beauty of it is that you're armed, you've done your research like we did, and you've got your questions ready.
You know,
depending on what you sense then from what they say to your reply. I mean, people email CEOs, and I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that. If I'm going to go and see somebody, I want information, I'm going to go and see them. I want to see the body language when they reply to me. Yeah. And I think going to these shows that enables you, me, and Weedy to get that information. Sorry, Pete, go on.
Claudio, when it comes to Atlantic Lithium and probably Lake as well, what do you think will be your exit route? Do you think at some point the shares will go so high you'll end up selling them? Or do you think these things will get taken over or whatever? Because one of the things that hits me about this, and it's what I always say to people investing in mining stocks, if these things are so amazing, why hasn't Glencore bought it? Why hasn't Billiton bought it? You know, that's a really important factor.
Very good question, Pete. Very good question.
Atlantic Lithium, exit strategy, if it gets bought out this year, maybe, I don't know.
Do you think that might happen then, a takeover?
Possibly, because Piedmont have bought into 50% of the Ewoyaa project, and they funded the 112 million, I think, already.
That sounds likely, doesn't it?
If
a big player is already in there.
So there you are. So Piedmont's lithium also had a deal with Tesla. So is this a deal back through the back door with Tesla? I don't understand why some of the car companies haven't gone straight upstream and started buying mining companies and to secure the lithium supply. But I only think that they just don't understand the supply chain as well as they should do, and how long it takes to get a lithium mine. You can't just turn it on. It takes 7 to 10 years from exploration to get it to production. And but so buyout is one strategy. The other one is Atlantic Lithium could turn around and go, now whatever is on offer, we'll take it to production. It's only in a year and a bit away. And I'd ride that through.
Okay. And
then you're talking maybe dividends along the line at some point as well. I'd take off a load of it, but then ride it through.
Do you think that, what do you think with Lake? Do you think that any feel as to what their exit might be? If you know what I mean?
No. Two incredibly smart guys. Again, Steve Promnitz, another geologist who answered lots of silly questions from me. And also really corrected me about nickel and explained it all really well. And he didn't have to do that. And I really appreciate it. And then did a lot of stuff around that. And where are they? They're looking to take it to production, you know. But I think there's some localization versus globalization. Emily Hirsch did a great podcast series about this, and had a guest, Hamatal Ben Basat from Nano One on it, who was also at Benchmark. And she did a great thing about, is localization, is Argentina and South America local to the US? The US hasn't got enough lithium, so where's it going to get its source? It's closer than Australia and Africa. So that's one option. The US, Biden did the bill the other day, didn't he? Then secure. So
sure, yeah.
The US are going to be after lithium and critical minerals. But Lake at the moment targeting to production is where, you know, and seeing where it goes. The numbers, once, if you look at the reports on there, once it gets to production, the share price just does that again. and that's one project. But they are one of several companies that are, you know, Lithium Americas are doing well. A lot of the, quite a few have been taken over, have joint ventures with Ganfeng from China. Not sure. One thing, Peter, you said about my returns, percentage returns.
Yeah.
Well, I sent you,
You sent me a ridiculous DM where I went, whoa. Because I think my CAGR over the past 15 years is quite good. But yours is just because you started and focused down despite losers over the past 7 years, and you've just, your percentage returns are just absolutely off the charts, mate.
What did I...
Do you want me to dig it out? Do you want me to tell people what it is?
No, hang on.
Let me find it, because this is just nuts.
I can't look at it because it's on the screen.
No, it's absolutely fine. I will dig it out. So I've got it here.
Wait a minute.
What do you want me to do with it?
Let me see. Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Worked it out last night. So this is.
Yep.
This. I think this is right. Okay. Right, over 6 years invested.
Let me just caveat this before you say it, right?
Yeah.
Anyone listening to this now, right, with regards to some of the positions I take, and the majority of the Claudio portfolio are deemed high risk. So don't go and try and follow this strategy, folks, please.
No, it is.
Please do your own research. Please position size accordingly, so that if anything that you do, which is high risk, goes wrong, it doesn't impact and impale your portfolio.
I will say that I met with a financial advisor before Christmas, and I'm intending to take a good chunk out at some point and place it with him and put it into boring dividend stocks just to have as a backup. Well, then I'll start again.
Capital preservation.
I worked out that because one of the things financial said, well, what's your book cost? What have you put in then? And where are you now? So I worked it out, and I won't tell you the numbers I put in or what it is worth now, but so over a 6-year period, it's 702% up. And so I think that's 117% average per annum.
That's just staggering.
And
fantastic. Yeah.
In that, then okay, there's been a couple of years when it was so that gives you an indication of where it's gone recently.
Yeah, but with late going up 8,000% in the past 2 years from its low to where it is now, that's gonna carry a lot of weight, mate. You know? And you've not even mentioned the fact that you got smashed to ribbons on rubbish like Tramon, Stratman and Prem. You know what I mean? Because this is it. We all go through points where we get stocks that are losing, or we've chosen the wrong management. They tell us what we want to hear, and we go, oh, lovely, lovely, we'll buy it. And it goes whoosh. So it's a journey. You know what I mean? Will it continue for you, or will it continue for me? We don't know. But you go through the hard parts where you will lose, and that's meant to help you actually transition from being an average person with X amount of losers and the portfolio going up and down to where you can actually gradually, using Kaizen principle of continual improvement, grow your portfolio. You know, not with as many risks.
No, I like that idea of making mistakes and learning from it. I'm a chess player. I used to coach chess and had some really good youngsters coming through, and you just play somebody harder, learn. Learn from them. Learn, and that is sort of philosophy of just learning through. But
listen, Claudio, what we're going to do? We're going to close it here. I'm conscious that we've been on for nearly an hour and a half already, right? We're going to close it here. We're going to get you back on the show. I'm just going to get Pete to just go and talk a little bit about the charity. I'm going to close it here. I'm not going to do a part two because otherwise I'll be here till 10 o'clock at night. Get Pete to talk about the backup charity. Who's donated? It's been an absolute joy to have you on. but we're probably going to need another hour and a half for you to chat. So thanks ever so much. Stay on picture. Pete, tell us about who's donated to the charity and let's just call this a day because we're going to be here all night.
Absolutely.
You've done a lithium special, Claudio. So thank you ever so much, mate. It's been absolutely brilliant to have you.
No, it's been great. Thank you, Claire. It's been absolutely excellent. And it's just really interesting to hear so much about the lithium thing, about the stocks you're looking at and what your approach is, because all that is fascinating. Let's just talk about, so the charity for this year that the podcast is supporting, and we've had a great response, so thank you to everybody. It's the Backup Trust, which is a charity that is very dear to my heart because they do a lot of work helping people with spinal injuries and stuff. If you listen to some of the podcasts that have come before this one, I think two or three ago particularly, I've talked quite at length about what Twin Peaks, what the Backup Trust does. To donate, if you go to www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Twin Peaks, and you can give a little donation there. Well, whatever you can give, 5 or 10 or 20 quid, whatever you can give, it is fantastic. So far then, we're up to £1,079, so it's climbing nicely.
Nice.
Let's have a squiz through, see who's... Right. I've got to try and work out the order these work at.
Backwards, mate. Go backwards.
Sorry?
Yeah. Just go from the top and then work your way down.
Well, Malcolm Reed. Thanks, Malcolm. That's excellent. And Ansuman, we know him. Funnily enough, I mentioned him on the last podcast we did. Keep up the excellent work, chaps. Your discussions and views are incredibly useful. I've learned a tremendous amount listening and following you two. Magic. Thanks, mate. Quality small cap investor. Yep, we know near this guy. Give us a nice donation. Dave Glass, Dave Glass one. He's a legend.
I reckon he's our number one fan, mate. Dave Glass is usually the first one to listen about 12:30 in the morning. You know what I mean?
Dave's bang on.
Brilliant.
Top lad.
Thanks, Dave.
I reckon I'm about to take you through the 1K unless there's any payments pending. A small price to pay for 12 months worth of quality stock banter. Great choice of charity and good luck. Cheers, mate. Got some money from Dave Lydon. Thank you, Dave. Brilliant. What else we got here? We got Terry. That's Terry. That's a pleasure to give for free stock market knowledge because I made more mistakes than the sheep in Wales. What? No mistakes. Anyway, please.
You must have known that party was coming on here today. Sheep in Wales. Oh my gosh.
And I've got to say, this is a great one from Henry, yeah? Henry Viola here. Keep up the great work, chaps. In addition to the wonderful fundraising you do for your charities, I find your podcast the essential part of my own mental well-being education. Thank you. Well, we know
the brilliant thing about what happened recently, I must say this, because Henry Viola, HT Viola, wrote an absolutely nailed-on review of the whole show. Been listening to it for the beginning where it was like in people's ears, and he just went through the years of the podcast and where it's at now, and the review and his writing skills are just absolutely phenomenal. He ripped us, you know, as in gave us really grief, picked us up, dropped us down, picked us up. Overall, the review was absolutely smashing. So thank you ever so much, Henry, for doing that. And we'll definitely be getting Henry on the show at some point in the not too distant future. To review his investing strategy, and also so he can come on the show and talk a bit more and say some more nice things about our show. So yeah,
absolutely. Else, Pete? Well, another one I'll mention quickly is our mate Faisal. He's at FEI5AL on Twitter. Cheers for highlighting the cause. All the best to both of you, Faisal. Thanks, mate. Brilliant. And let's mention Nigel Donati. I don't know Nigel, but well, I probably do, but you know how it is. I love your banter, chaps, and always learn a lot from your podcast. I'm on Twitter as Don't Tell Him Pike. Oh, I do know him. Yeah. Hello, mate. But I don't really use it very much. Great calls, and I'll be donating again. Cheers, Nigel. Thanks. But that's fantastic, Nigel. Brilliant stuff. Cool. So, yeah, if people can just, whatever you can afford, just small donation, whatever. I know it's tough times. People's portfolios are getting battered, whatever. But, you know, some. You know, paying it forward and all that was brilliant.
Now, Claudio, do you want to say anything, any parting words, mate? It's been absolutely phenomenal to have you on there. I'm hoping your Australian listeners will pick their ears up as well and have a little listen to us as well. But you've been awesome, mate. I really appreciate you coming on.
Brilliant.
Well, thank you. I know you've pestered me for a while, and I tended to be sort of...
I'm persistent. What can I say?
Or anonymous. And, but, you know, I've learned a lot, and I would just pay tribute to those people I've learned a lot from. And they are people from whether they're CEO or chair or of companies, the geologists, or whether it's people I've met at different events. And there's a great community. I think that one of the best things I did was going on Twitter and meeting people that way. So it's, and when you meet people in real life, they tend to be like their Twitter characters as well. So
oh yeah, you can see why you've already triggered Pete saying that, because yeah, it's an absolute liability at times, mate. Sometimes I see some of the tweets and I'm going, what is he doing now? What's he saying now? It's like mad.
No, I've enjoyed it. It's been on with you. I'm not sure what I expected, but it's been good. So well, thank you. And I might come back. I don't know. We'll see. I won't.
Generous to a fault, you are, mate. Oh my gosh.
Still got loads of questions. You are,
mate. What do you want to finish with, really? What do you want to finish with, mate?
Mate, I'm all done, mate. I'm washed out. Okay. So, one thing I will say quickly is that I'm hoping that I'm actually making progress going down the private route of getting my bladder stone removed and getting me sorted. So once I'm sorted, you lot are in trouble. That's all I'll say.
We're in trouble already. Now, ladies and gents, I want to say thank you ever so much. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for persisting with us. Thank you for, and I hope you enjoy this long, long podcast, the longest we've probably ever done. And it's not Claudio's fault. It's myself and Pete's fault for asking so many questions, because it was such an interesting topic. We've not done what we normally do. We hope you appreciate the time we've put into to do this for you. And we'll look forward to your feedback. Thank you for your feedback, continuous feedback. And once again, all the feedback from the last podcast is going to be in the write-up that I put in to on my website and retweeted as a first tweet. All your feedback's going to be on there. And the feedback for this show will be on the next write-up for the next show. Thank you ever so much. Take care. God bless. Be kind. Pay it forward. Do what you can for others. And we'll all stay blessed. See you later.
Thank you.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.